Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any appeal to authority. My guest today is Andy West, a transformative mediator who works for Camden Mediation Service in London, and he's here to talk to us today about transformative mediation. Hello, Andy. Welcome to the MWS podcast.
Hi, Barry. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Can you begin by telling us something of your life and background?
I trained as a mediator about 3 years ago. I was motivated to get into mediation because, like everyone, I've experienced conflict, and I found it difficult and disempowering. But it also made me ask a lot of questions about how people get on and how they connect and what they do at times of difficulty. So that was my personal motivations, which were the dominant ones above a professional motivation or anything like that for getting involved in mediation.
And you have a background in philosophy as well. You teach philosophy to children.
That's right. I teach philosophy to children. And I suppose there's something about the discourse of philosophy, which is very conflict-heavy, but it's a kind of healthy... It has a very healthy view of conflict, but it has a view of conversation, which is very often about excluding the emotions, whereas I think conflict mediation is about allowing conflict in a space where you've allowed emotion as well.
Okay, so transformative mediation is a strategy for conflict resolution. So what is conflict?
Well, conflict on the transformative, I think there are lots of different ways we can see conflict. There are lots of ways of relating to that aspect of our experience and lots of different stories we can tell. The way I think it's most positive to see conflict is an inevitable aspect of interpersonal relations, that if we want to be either intimate or at least part of a community together, then conflict will occur between people. Now, that's not to say as a mediator I'm completely fatalistic about it. It's just I accept that it happens, and would think it strange if it didn't. So the dynamics of conflict are, I think, about people feeling afraid and withdrawing from one another out of a need for safety. And as part of that safety, need for safety and feeling threatened, conjuring a not-so-human vision of the other, the person they're in conflict with, the other disputant, which further reaffirms mutual feelings of insecurity. So I think a conflict spiral is one where disempowerment and a feeling of threat reaffirms a mutual feeling of dehumanization.
Would you go so far as to say you demonize the other person? Is that sort of vocabulary you would use in TM?
Yeah. Demonizing is part of the transformative vocabulary. Whether it's an essential one, I don't know. I think it just means the reason that word is used is just to say that in conflict, you know, we don't have the fullest possible image of someone. We have a very partial image of them. And maybe even if we do have a fuller image, it could be a cynical one.
Okay. And conflict, from a TM perspective, is simply part of the human condition.
Exactly, yeah. So there are other perspectives on conflict, like I said, which see conflict as a kind of fall from an ideal human condition. So the idealized human state is one where things are harmonious and we have an open connection with each other. Yeah. And conflict is a kind of alienation from an ideal state. So this is found in Marshall Rosenberg's writings in NBC that, you know, whenever we're making demands or in a sort of relating to each other in terms of power rather than feelings and needs and things like that, we are alienated from this.
Yeah, well, we can come and look at the differences between TM and MVC later, but what should we do about conflict?
Well, I suppose transformative mediators do very little on the belief that less is more with conflict mediation, that allowing people an opportunity to have a conversation whilst feeling safe and supported is the best thing to do. So allowing disputants to have their conflict and communicate, and offering them opportunities to have a more humanized view of each other, to show more recognition for each other as people, will help them move away from that demonized view and help both parties to make empowered decisions about what they do about their relationship. So I certainly don't think we should try and quash conflicts or try to use any other strategies such as moral motivations for ending conflict. I think conflict is an interpersonal phenomenon, and I think it should be dealt with interpersonally rather than ideologically. Yeah.
Okay. What should we do about conflicts that can't be resolved?
Well, first we have to suspend judgment that this conflict cannot be resolved, because we don't know. There's so much we don't know about dispute that people are in conflict, even if one of those people is ourselves. We don't want to say this conflict can't be solved prematurely. However, if you've had a case that you've worked on for a long time and a conflict really hasn't been resolved, I think we shouldn't feel too defeated about that. We shouldn't feel as though resolution is the aim of conflict mediation. I think that resolution can often be quite superficial.
Yeah.
So legal teams will help you resolve conflicts, you know, materially. But in divorces, certain people, you know, one party will get the house, another party will have access to the children more often than the other one. And these are resolutions. However, the wounds of conflict, the distrust, the suspicion, the low self-esteem that can take root when someone's been arguing with someone they're close to for a long time hasn't been addressed. Mm-hmm. So for a conflict that, quote, hasn't been resolved, I would say that we should look and see, has this person gained more insight into themselves or the other person? Are they making decisions based on that? It may well be that after coming to mediation, what you realize is you need to leave your partner, or you need to leave your colleague, or it's probably best if you don't have a relationship with your neighbor anymore. These can be the most empowered decisions people make. Their conflicts are not resolved, but there is a sense in which they're moving on with their lives.
So success, then, in transformative mediation is measured more by shift and empowerment and recognition than the resolution of the conflict itself.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, a conflict being resolved is a wonderful thing, but it's not the measure.
Okay. Well, we touched on MVC before. Can you give a quick overview of that approach and in what way it differs from transformative mediation?
Well, I can give a conceptual overview. So I'm not a trained MVC practitioner, but there's lots of literature out there, and there is a semantic framework for MVC, which is very clear and very prescriptive. So transformative mediation places a value on emphasizing ownership of the party's words, feelings, expressions, and allowing them to be as they are. MVC thinks that when we're in conflict, perhaps there's a way in which we lose some of our eloquence, that our articulation is impoverished by our mood.
Yeah.
And that actually what we mean when we call someone a so-and-so and that you hate them and that how dare you treat me like this and I should never have let you into my life is that I'm feeling upset when I see you do such and such.
Yeah.
Because I have a need for respect and space, and I request that you, I make requests that are based on meeting those needs. So there's a sense in which MVC deals with conflict by reframing disputants' expressions in terms of what they really mean. And therefore, they have to have a framework of what do we really mean when we say X. Whereas transformative mediators don't have such, they don't have a means of translating the disputant's language into another before entering into conversation with them.
And is this approach, this framing that the MVC does, in a sense it's like an idealised form of communication, whereas the TM model is more about allowing the people involved in the mediation to find their own ways?
Yeah, I would say that's a fair way of talking. MVC, it is an idealised mode of talking, according to certain ideals, of course.
Yeah.
It might not be ideal for everyone.
So where MVC seeks to encourage everyone to speak in terms of feelings and needs, transformative mediation values everyone's choice about how to speak.
Yeah, so for example, you may mediate a case and one party, perhaps this is a case about between a headmaster and a teacher, and the headmaster is talking about the feeling that the teacher is engendering at the school and the feelings it's leaving for him. And the teacher may not wish to talk in feeling terms at all. It may be a vulnerability that they feel, and they may wish to talk about this as legalistically as they can. As a transformative mediator, there's a sense in which we can embrace both of those desires.
Yeah.
Whereas if a client doesn't want to get into feeling, there's a sense in which an MVCer will either have to make themselves redundant or somehow push, because they believe that talking about feelings is a better way to talk about conflict than anything else.
I sense in a way there's a balancing act going on with a TM, that like a balance between autonomy and this term you use, empowerment, and relating to others, recognition. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I'd say one of the implicit beliefs, although it's written anywhere, that you could read into transformative mediation is that we become more autonomous once we have having a humanized view of other people, especially those we're in conflict with, gives us more power in our own lives, more autonomy, more freedom, more flexibility.
Okay. And this relational view goes against the prevailing worldview of our society in which people are assumed to be separate and self-interested.
Yes, I suppose there are models for dealing with conflict which play into the atomized nature of society. So legal teams, for example, each disputant privately hires their own legal team who privately do their own research and then come together to argue, and there's a winner and a loser.
Yeah.
So that's a very individuated process. Whereas I think if you see conflict as something that happens in people's relationships, then it's neither one nor the other, but it's about the thing that they share, the thing that they're both holding on to, which is a relationship. So yes, it is. It's not in keeping with, I suppose, an atomized vision of society, transformative mediation.
This also seems to tie in very much with the latest finds in neuroscience, that we're not just based on self-interest, but a big part of our makeup is our empathic abilities too.
Yes, yeah. I think if you're a mediator, you can either have a very negative view or a very positive view of human desire and ability to connect. If you had a vision where everyone was selfish, and only really related to other people as a means to an end, then it would be really hard to mediate. And I think these sort of insights that come from neuroscience reaffirm the positive vision that you have of people if you're a mediator.
Yeah, okay. With NBC, one can also work with conflict at an individual level. Is that also possible with TM?
Transformative mediators do work with individuals. Perhaps the disputant, one disputant wants to go to mediation and the other one doesn't. So there's a sense in which support can be given. Conflict is also something we go through as a private experience. And it's not just something that always involves the other person. So that's important too.
How popular is transformative mediation?
It depends which part of the world you're in. In places like Slovenia at the moment, it's very popular. In London, Camden is the only public mediation service that uses transformative mediation. Whereas in the States, where it was founded, its use is much wider. The unions and the postal service had a very famous dispute some years back, and that's where transformative mediation came in to help. That's probably the most high-profile use of transformative mediation.
But in the UK, because it's not that well known, how well received is it, and what sort of resistance do you come across?
It's actually very well received in the UK. Transformative mediation has a really positive image for something that's not very well known. A lot of mediators I know who work in NVC or restorative justice or community-based mediation have really positive things to say about transformative mediation. It's just, I think it's partly about the marketplace and how things are really suffering at the moment. Mediation is something that should be available and that the state it would be in their interest to fund, because if you've got housing estates built after the Second World War with very little soundproofing, you're going to have lots of conflict. And what's happened in the recent cuts is that mediation services have suffered, because you can make cuts to conflict mediation, and short term there's very little change to well-being or ethos within housing. Long term, obviously, the cuts are much bigger. So people are very positive about transformative mediation. I think the reason it's not everywhere or as many places as it could be is partly to do with the current economic situation and the austerity decisions that have been made as to what counts as important and not important within people's lives.
Okay, my last question, Andy. What is your understanding of the middle way, and how does it relate to what we've been talking about today?
I suppose I always think of the middle way as a means by which to break out of binary thinking between this or that, that there's a sort of impoverishment there. Now, it's funny because sometimes I give children questions that have binaries in them, and they can try and diffuse the questions by taking the middle ground, and it can be quite dissatisfying because you're left with a sort of mediocrity.
Yeah.
However, I don't think that's what the middle way is saying. I think it's not leaving us with a sort of 50-50 approach to life, but one that allows us to explore the extremes of our experience and use them accordingly. So I think that that's the thing that the middle way most shares in common with transformative mediation, is a dissolving of the binary for us and them, me and you, for a kind of a more experimental approach to how you look at relationships, for example.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking to me today, Andy. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Middleway philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.